session number 9474, reel 6.
Mr. George Harbottle, Reel 6. Is there anything else you remember about your period between Hill 60 and Dicky Bush?
Well, nothing, except that each night, of course, you're going back again from Hill 60 to your transport lines on your own. There was quite a deal of shelling going on. Occasionally you got landed in trouble. There was one time I did pick up a heavy artillery limber going back empty, we'd been taking ammunition up with six horses, and I got onto the seat. There was one place along there that they called Shrapnel Avenue, and there were two of these limbers, one ahead of us and one in ours, and the front one, a shell landed on the rear limber and turned it right over. The front limber was still there, and our lot were going, because of the shelling, they were going stretch gallop, which is pretty good on a rough road like that. The horses cleared it, but the wheel didn't, and the wheel hit the stationary wheel. And, of course, that snapped the traces. I went head over heels and landed in a ditch with my rifle, but wasn't hurt. They got this damaged limber chucked on the side of the road, our limber passed, and off it went again. Marvelous the way these men could pick up horses, retrace them, and as though nothing had happened. That was life. Generally, you were just carrying your rifle and trekking along the road, and eventually getting in, getting a bit of sleep, and then off again the next night.
Were the sort of rations that they were getting and that you were now in charge of providing, were they changing at all as the years went on?
No, pretty much the same thing.
So it was always the standard tins?
Pretty, that's right.
Would they ever get any fresh meat, or they wouldn't be able to cook it, I presume?
Very rare.
And any question of hot meals while they're in the front line or support lines?
No. When they're back by in the Canada huts where the reserve was, oh yes, they would get a hot meal there.
What was your responsibility as CQMS when they were out of the line then?
Well, it was just your ordinary job went on. You got to look after everything.
Just a lot simpler, not having to go up to the line. Is that what the difference was?
Well, I mean, there was nothing much different. If you're out of the line, well, you're eating with the sergeants. Sergeant's mess.
You had a sergeant's mess established?
Sergeant's mess if you're out of the line.
Can you tell me something about the sergeant's mess? What went on in there?
It was simply a question of where you got your food. There was nothing else. It was simply a hut where you were eating.
Was there a sergeant's mess fund amongst the sergeants to get any extras?
No. weren't any extras to be got, and Beep said it, there was nothing extra.
So even when you're out on rest, there was nothing.
No, to be on rest, you had to be a good deal further back than the Ypres salient. I mean, this was merely a question of reserve position at Canada Huts for the people who weren't actually in the line.
So, when you were at rest, did the character of the mess change then? When you were right out of the line?
Well, there, yes, you did get fresh vegetables and things like that, and a bit of fresh meat.
Was that in the rations, or did you get that extra?
We had in our battalion what were called the Friends of the Northumberland Fusiliers, and the Friends of the 6th Battalion, and they used to collect money here, and that money was available to buy extra rations for us, and we did occasionally get fresh meat and fresh vegetables through the Friends of the 6th.
Now, during this time, you mentioned letters from home. Did you get a lot of letters from home?
No, not often. It was a rare thing my father ever wrote a letter, and I used to get an occasional letter from my mother.
Did you write home yourself?
Oh, yes. I told him what was going on. There was a special envelope, you know, that you were issued with, and it was supposed to be uncensored. You censored it yourself.
Was that the green envelope?
That's right.
Would you take that responsibility seriously, or...?
Oh, yes.
What sort of thing would you write about, then?
Oh, just as to how you were, and keeping all the sticky details out.
So you didn't let them know the reality of it?
No.
And you got letters from home. Would you get parcels as well?
Yes.
What would be in those?
Oh, I don't know. There'd be various chocolate and one thing and another.
Would there be specific things that you needed or requested?
Yes. Probably socks and that kind of thing.
Did you get any leave at all during this period?
Yes. I got leave quite early on, somewhere around about July 1915. It was 48 hours from railhead to railhead, so that by the time you got to Newcastle, you had a day here and you were back again.
Didn't take
into account the fact that you had to go all the way from Newcastle, a man in London would get 2 days, you see.
That's what you did, is it? You went back to Newcastle?
Yes.
What reception did you get there? What was it?
Oh, well, I mean, your parents were delighted to see you, but I looked at the cricket club and had a beer or two, and after that, they gave you 7 days leave.
When did you get your first 7 days leave?
Round about Christmas 1915, or January 1916. It was somewhere around about then. I got my first 7 days.
And what did you do on that leave? Fairly well similar, or?
I got to London and then up to Newcastle and had a game or two of golf, and that was that.
When you were back on leave, did people ask you about the Western Front, what it was like?
Yes. Well, they all wanted to know a lot of things, but you didn't give them much in the way of sticky details.
So they wouldn't understand from what you told them what it was like?
Well, I don't know. They'd get a fair idea. Put two and two together.
Were you a bit of a hero when you were back on leave? I mean, did people treat you as if you were a hero, or... did they treat you in a special way?
No, I mean, the fact that you're at home and you're able to get a decent hot bath and lie in the morning and get some decent food.
So people didn't treat you in a special way as a soldier?
Well, I mean, they were pleased to see you, and you know, and various people said, "Well, glad to see you're a sergeant now, or a quartermaster sergeant, or something like that." Yeah. That's all.
Now, you went out with some special friends. Had you been able to stay in contact with those?
Most of the people that you were interested in were in the army.
No, sorry. When you got back to the front, were you able to stay in contact with the people you joined the army with, your special friends? Were you still in touch with them?
They were in your unit, yes.
What sort of contact would you have with them? Constant or?
I mean, depends who they were, how near they were.
Did you have any special friend?
I had some that that you were a couple of sergeants together, you see, and adjacent platoons and all that kind of thing.
Where did you go from this sector then? Well, you were back in Ypres. Where did you go then? After Ypres.
After Ypres, we went to Armentières and had a good time there, because that was a quiet part of the line, the conditions. Armentières was still a living town. You see, we were only we were up at Houpline, which was only about a mile from the outskirts of Armentières, but there was very little shelling of the town, and the shops were going in good form. The estaminets were there. The beer was still there, and it was quite a pleasant town.
This business of quiet sectors, do you think this was by mutual agreement? How would a quiet sector start? Were the rules on both sides? There's been some interest.
No, Ypres was such a vital factor that there was always fighting going on there. But in the other, a lot of the other parts, it wasn't noisy until somebody started to kick you up a row. You see, in the area around Loos, there was a peaceful area until they had the that engagement at the end of 1915.
So the reason that the sectors were quiet was that people didn't see the point.
There was no point in doing anything very much there.
What about the idea of just killing Germans, so to speak? Did people in your... Because some battalions would, I believe, cause trouble wherever they went. Was the 6th Battalion's idea to live and let live? Or?
Yes, well, the 6th and the 149 Brigade was known as a fighting unit.
So when you went into a quiet sector, would they try and liven it up a bit, or what?
It depended upon if there was any particular point. But I know that when we got to Wichert Ridge, they stuck a great placard up: "Go to hell, Newcastle United," or something of that kind.
What was the response to that?
Oh, we wouldn't get talking about that.
So, while you were at Armentières, it was very quiet.
Yes.
And where did you go after that?
Armentières. That was in 1916, and of course the great Somme battle, July the 1st. We weren't there for that. But we moved down there in the August to Henencourt Woods, and then we were at Ypres all that winter.
So when you got to Henencourt Wood on the Somme, what were conditions like there?
Oh, there, Henencourt Woods was a reserve position, and actually we had a cricket match there.
Can you tell me about that? That sounds interesting.
We'd only just arrived down there, and there was a very nice stretch of grass. The only trouble was the saplings all about the blooming place, like fielders, there were a number of us who were keen cricketers, and they brought the stuff out. And, I remember I went in to bat first, and my first off drive hit a sapling, so I didn't get any runs off that. And I think I got a four off the next one, which got between the trees. And then a thunderstorm descended upon us, and we packed in and got underneath a GS wagon for safety. And that night we were told to put all that stuff away. We're off at dawn up the line.
How far from the line were you?
Oh, we were. Oh, that was quite a long way behind Albert.
So when you went into the line, what were conditions like there?
Which well, part of the line? Well, you see, I was still quartermaster sergeant there, and the conditions by that time, you see, we had command of the air at that time, and you could move about behind the lines in a way you couldn't in any other part of the front. Because we had, there were no enemy aircraft coming over. But the trouble was there that, of course, in the Somme, it's all cement. It's all chalk, and the roads, of course, were never meant for heavy transport, lorries and one thing and another, and they were churned up into great mud baths. And every time you went up the line, we put sandbags round our legs because we were walking in water all the time, or mud. And by the time you came back again, which was took a long time on the Somme, I may tell you, because you went up, and there was so much traffic. On the roads with ammunition and supplies going up that it was terribly slow going. It took you hours to get up to the dump, and then you had to wait for the ration party coming down. They had a little light railway trolleys which ran the rations up on a trolley, but then you got up there and then did your ration run? Go round with the rations, see the company commander, see the regimental sergeant major, and so on, and then make your way back again. And you were at it again within two or three hours. It was about as tough going as you could possibly imagine.
So, what time would you start on that business?
We start about 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock in the morning.
No, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Sorry, yes.
4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you'd be lucky if you got back at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So then you'd sleep?
Yes.
How long would you normally be able to sleep?
Well, I don't know. You snatch as much sleep as you could, and then get yourself equipped to be off. Your dumper had done getting the rations out.
That sounds as if it might lead to exhaustion over a period of time. Was it very tiring?
Well, you had to be pretty tough to stand up to that sort of thing. And that's why some fellows would prefer to be in the line rather than doing a quartermaster sergeant's job, which means so much travelling, working.
While you were travelling on the Somme, was there more of an artillery problem? Because the routes
No, but the dumps were further back, and the carrying of rations was further was a greater distance.
So, while you were there, was the unit involved in any attacks while they were on the Somme?
Yes, there were various attacks, because there in the winter there was the Butte de Wallancourt, and there was fighting going on round there.
Well, as quartermaster sergeant, you wouldn't be involved in such.
Oh, I wasn't involved in that. We were involved in getting stuff there to supply them.
What impression did you get of the fighting on the Somme from what people told you?
Oh, well, of course, the fighting that we were experiencing then, in that winter, the fighting had very largely died down. It was only sporadic stuff. But the Butte de Wallancourt was a very good observation post, and of course the Germans held that.
How did How did the conditions on the Somme, the weather and such like, how did that affect you in that winter of 16?
Well, you see, it was a bad winter, that winter, and when we were down on the Somme, there was quite a bit of snow.
What would your accommodation be like on the wagon lines in the Somme?
We were in huts. Listen, huts.
So you were far enough back to be out of the range of most artillery?
Oh, yes.
The Nissen huts, what sort of comforts from home would they have inside them? I mean,
very little. The fact that you were under cover was something.
How did this compare with what the infantry in the line would get?
It was all the same. They were in Nissen huts too.
When they were back?
Yes. Occasionally you were in Vienna huts, which were much bigger, and would take a whole company.
Are there any more incidents you can remember from your time on the Somme in 1916? Stories that can bring some of it to life?
Well, of course, there was around Christmas, there was a bit of a truce that took place at the Butte of Wallencourt.
Could you tell me about that?
It was the snow, and both sides were quite inclined to disregard each other, and people were wandering around on the top for quite a time. But one stupid Irishman in the battalion, there was one bloody great German who came into over his line, and this Irishman didn't like the look of him, and he fired at him, and of course that set everything ablaze, and there were other people were firing, and the machine guns started firing, and the trench mortar, the field guns started to fire, and you know, it all hell let loose once again.
When was this mini truce?
It was around about Christmas.
Well, did you actually see this happening?
No, I wasn't there, but they told me all about it. And McCree, who did the thing, he eventually survived the war, went out to the States, and made a fortune in the coal trade.
So you went through the winter into 1916, into 1917.
Yes.
You were still in the Butte de Wallencourt area, weren't
you? That was after that. Then we got to, there was a question as to where we knew we were going to move. But the question was where, and at the transport lines where I was, you know, this is the place where the rumors started, and I said, now come on, let's set a rumor going that is quite improbable. And we'll see how long it takes before it comes back. And I got a map out, and we were then at near Albert, you see, north of the Somme. And so I said, well, there's no likelihood of us, the French are holding the part further south. Now, here's a place called Proyart, down on the south side, held by the French. We're going to move there. We'll set that rumor going. But you know, in 48 hours, it was back. But the trouble was, it was real. And that's where we did go. So we went south of the Somme to take over more land from the French.
How did the French lines differ from... I mean, when you
went
up...
Oh, the French, they were filthy. The French lines were very poor quality trenches, badly sandbagged, and the communication trenches were bad. It was a quiet part of the line there, but certainly they hadn't done any work. Oh well, that's where we were, and that's where we started up a canteen.
Oh, well, you, I must hear about that. So you moved down there, what was that, January you moved down there?
Yes. somewhere around about January, yes.
Did the battalion start to put the French trenches right when they got there?
Yes.
They'd do the standard...
Oh, yes, there were constant working parties.
So it wasn't acceptable?
No, our officers were very keen about that straight away.
Can you tell me now about... You say you started a canteen. Can you tell me the story of that?
I got permission to start a sergeant's mess. I knew you could make money out of that. And if you make money out of it, you could use the money for fresh vegetables and fresh meat and that kind of thing. And so the company commander gave me permission to start it. And so... We formed a sergeant's mess, and they were got special permission to serve the hard stuff, and that's what paid.
That's how it differed from previous sergeant messes, is it?
Yes, beer only and other ones. There was one fellow, a member of the cricket club here, who was a first-class beer drinker, and. I got permission to go and get a couple of barrels of beer from a canteen, from a brewery. But I took my Sergeant Taylor, who was a storeman, and a very good beer drinker, with me in the mess cart, and we went off to buy the beer. And we went down into the vats of a brewery. And he sampled one barrel after another, and eventually he decided that was the one, and so we got a couple of barrels of that and brought that up for the beer.
How else did you... Where did you put the sergeant's mess?
In the Nissen hut.
How far behind the line was it?
This was when we were near Proyart, some distance behind the line.
What else did you provide in the sergeant's mess besides beer and whiskey or whatever?
We get a bit of cold meat and sandwiches and that sort of thing.
Where would you get the furniture from? Because for the actual mess,
there wasn't much in the way of furniture, John, a sergeant, would produce some benches and one thing and another out of broken down houses.
What was the atmosphere like in the sergeant's mess?
Oh, good. Cheerful. Get people drink and they'll be cheerful.
What sort of topics were discussed?
Any topic that was going on, political or wartime or anything about the battalion and so on.
Was this the only thing you set up, or did you set any entertainment up for the sergeants or the troops while you were back? Any entertainment for the troops or for the sergeants?
No, not really. There was one time when we did get a sing-song going in a Vienna hut. That was a rarity, and there wasn't much talent anyway.
The sergeant's mess, about how many people would attend that? Would all the sergeants go, or...?
Most of the sergeants, yes.
Did it have any traditions that establish traditions as an officer's one did?
It was a place to meet and drink.
Would people drink very much?
No. No. There was... You couldn't afford to drink much.
How long were you at this place then?
We were prior to, until April... we then did a route march for three days from there up to Arras.
So you weren't on the front line at all while you were at Priort?
The battalion were.
The battalion was further forward?
Further forward, yes.
And they'd be coming back to the Nissen huts? Right.
But then we marched from there in filthy weather. I mean, it was sleet and one thing and another, and got up to Arras in time for Easter. for the Arras, first Battle of Arras.